All right, well, today I want to talk a little bit about near-surface soil moisture and spatial dependence that's associated with that. So at the top I have a definition of what I'm considering near-surface soil moisture to be. And a lot of research has been done about soil moisture and the variability on pretty large scales. And for my case, I'm actually interested in getting down to fundamentally what's going on spatially at a very basic and smaller level. And some motivation behind why we might want to consider this. So I'm talking on the meter scale. Are for things like ground-based remote sensing validation, so taking a microwave radiometer and trying to use point measurements to validate what you're getting from that. Some comparison of in-situ sensor measurements, so if you install sensors into the ground and you put them at the same location, it's obviously not possible to put them at the exact same location. So there may be some inherent variability in the difference in location there. And finally, if we're considering the case where we're looking at these larger studies, we might take a point, and we might want to consider taking more than one measurement at a point to sort of validate what we're getting at this quote-unquote represented point if we're talking on, you know, the area of 100 square meters or more. So for this study, my main motivation was the validation of some ground-based remote sensing. So taking a typical footprint of a microwave radiometer and asking the question, well, if I want to represent the mean soil moisture for that area, how many measurements do I need? Where should these measurements be taken? And then can we develop some sort of set of rules over various soil moisture conditions? So the data that I collected is on an area of about 7 by 9 meters, so a very small area. And I used a simple random sampling scheme on a very fine grid, so I'm a statistician, so I like lots of data points. And actually came up with 350 sampling locations, which I think ended up coming out to about an observation every 0.2 meters squared. So it's a very fine, detailed sampling scheme. And we did this for 6 days. And recorded soil moisture in meters cubed per meters cubed. And just to get an idea of what our data looks across like days, you'll notice these aren't consecutive days. So we've got the 23rd, 29th of July, 31st of July, and so on. These days were basically chosen kind of out of convenience in terms of I wanted to get a pretty good representation of different soil moisture conditions. So we can see that, of course, August 26th is the day that is the wettest, and that was basically a day where the field had almost reached full saturation. And our driest day is the 17th of August. And for the most part, the variability within a day is fairly equitable, except for our last day, the 26th of August, which is going to become sort of an important case to remember down the road. So you have soil moisture observations, you have geographical locations associated with them. As a statistician, the first thing I think about is, well, can we characterize the spatial variability of soil moisture? So we have Matherin's empirical variogram estimators, which is represented by the dots, or the points on our graph, and then a theoretical variogram. In this case, I tried several different theoretical variograms, but the one that ends up fitting the best in all cases is an exponential. And so we have the theoretical variogram that was proposed by Cressy under the assumptions of second-order stationarity and isotropy. So basically what you have in the plot is, as a function of distance, what does the variability of soil moisture look like? So the distance being the distance between two points. And our parameter estimates are listed down here. So for C0 hat, I have 0.0002. which basically represents what happens when a distance of zero separates two points in the field. And so we have a measure of variability that's fairly small. C sub E hat represents what we refer to as partial sill. So if we add C sub 0 and C sub E, we get our sill, and that's the maximum amount of variability between points that's achieved. And then A sub E is what we typically refer to as our practical range. So that's the distance at which you achieve this maximum variability, C sub E. So this is for the July 23rd case. Just to give you an idea of what it looked like across all other days, again, these are all exponential variograms. And you can see that the exponential variogram is doing a pretty good job of capturing what's going on. And just to give you an idea of the parameter estimates that are obtained. So our nugget, this C sub 0, seems to be fairly constant across days, which would indicate that this is usually just a measure of some sort of variability, measurement error with the instrument that we're using. The maximum amount of variability that we're achieving, you can kind of see some patterns. So if you look at the mean soil moisture, if you throw out the August 26th case, in which we have a very, very wet case, in general, and remember again that August 17th is the very, very dry case or relative to the rest. So in general, the wetter you get, the more variability that we're seeing, except for when you have the more extreme cases of very wet and very dry. And similarly, you can see when we have these extreme cases where we're wet and dry, the range or the distance where we achieve this maximum variability is quite small. And then when we look at the other cases that are sort of more in the middle, we see that those are the cases where this range is a little bit bigger. So, well, what can we do by describing this spatial dependence? So basically, our ultimate goal, again, to go back, was to take this area and come up with an estimate for what we expect the mean soil moisture to be. So in general, when I start talking about methods, the way that I am producing estimates is to, for each day, estimate the parameters for the exponential variogram, and then use ordinary kriging to predict on a pretty fine grid. And using those predictions from ordinary kriging, compute the field average. Then I'm going to compare this predicted average to what I'm calling the true average. Since I have 350 measurements for a 7x9 meter field, I figured this is the best I can do. So I took the mean of those 350 measurements to be my quote-unquote true mean. Once I have my predicted average and a true mean, I can calculate absolute differences. And for me as a statistician, an interesting measure for me is to look at the percent distance from the true mean, and I'll talk a little bit about what this means. So I did a simulation study. We consider situation I and randomly sample I locations from your possible 350 via several different methods. Use what I talked about in the previous slide to predict the field average using spatial dependence, and then compute my measure as the distance from the true mean. And I did this 1,000 times for each of the sampling methods that I have here. So the filled circle with the line represents what we see in the independence case. So if I sample 50 points from my 350, and I just compute the straight average and disregard any sort of spatial dependence. The random with the box is also random sampling, but now I'm incorporating spatial dependence. The stratified is stratified sampling incorporating spatial dependence, and it was stratified by location in this field. And then the lattice design, because we didn't initially construct lattice sampling method. These are pseudo lattice samples that I constructed, which is basically points in these 350 that come as close to a lattice sampling design as possible. And what you have pictured here is what I call the MPP, which is this percent distance from the true mean. And I'm aware a lot of you are more interested in just the numerator of this equation, which is fairly easy to get back to that. And the curves are actually the 90th percentile of these 1,000 simulations that I did for each method. So to try to be more realistic about what could happen if we chose a really horrible sample, instead of taking the mean value. So basically you can think of 90% of the time you'll be doing this well or better. So let's say that you're interested in an MPP of 4%. You can come along, look at 4% and see where your curve hits depending on the sampling method that you're using, and determine how many points that you would need in order to achieve that level of accuracy. So to give you a little bit better of an idea, here's an example. This is achieving approximately a 2% MPP, which would translate to a 4% change in absolute difference. So if your numerator was 4%, the absolute difference was 4%. Under the different sampling schemes, these are the number of points that you would need per day, and I've put this true mean there to remind you which cases we're talking about. So in most of the cases, just random sampling with incorporating spatial dependence actually seems to do the trick. It's a little bit difficult too. You don't want to read too much into the stratified and lattice. So if you're familiar with stratified and lattice sampling, there are only a finite number of combinations you can use. For example, a lattice, I only considered like a 2x2, a 3x3, a 2x3. So it's not possible that we could come up with 17 sampling points needed for a stratified or lattice sample in this case. But the main takeaway from this is, in the case, August 26th, that I pointed out where it was extremely wet, you need hardly any points at all. So, and that just comes from the fact that, you know, there's not a lot of variability once everything gets really, really wet. And the cases where that you need more measurements tend to be the ones where you're sort of at the drier end of the spectrum with the 0.17, 0.2, 0.21. And when you get a little bit wetter but you're not up into the case of August 26th, then you need fewer points. And the other thing that I really think you can gain from this is that there actually is a lot to be gained by incorporating the spatial dependence. So you can see the difference between just randomly sampling and coming up with an independent, so just taking the mean without incorporating spatial dependence, that those numbers are quite a bit higher than if you incorporate the spatial dependence in terms of how many points you need. So what have we learned from all this? Well, I think across soil moisture conditions, we've seen that, at least for our field, there's a pretty consistent soil moisture spatial process going on that we were able to describe using an exponential variogram. Secondly, we can come up with a number of measurements that are required, but first you have to tell me what level of accuracy you want. Random sampling with spatial dependence seemed to do the trick for a field of this size. And we did, of course, see some variability across conditions, so in the number of points that are needed. When it's really wet, then that's when maybe we don't care so much about incorporating all of these methods. So for further work, the important thing to point out here is all of this was dependent upon knowing the true variogram, which in practice, I know you guys don't want to go out and measure 350 points every time to come up with what your spatial model is, and it defeats the purpose. So we'll continue this work by investigating practical options for estimating the spatial dependence model without having to take such a large number of measurements. And then finally, this was all on bare soil, so it's going to be important to look at how vegetation changes that. Thank you.
Time for one quick question. There's a question. Anyone?
What type of soil?
Just silty clay loam.
Okay. Again, I'm a statistician. My knowledge of soil.
How long did it take you to make a set of measurements using one sensor?
Yes.
How long did it take you to do 350 samples?
350 took about an hour and a half. And we did that at about 6 in the morning.